Welcome to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you're with us. I'm in the studio with Kerry Jr. II, who is the show's producer.
Hey, good morning, Stephen.
Yeah. So today I want us to take a pause and do something that I don't know a lot of people end up doing.
We don't.
And that is take a really close look at the proposed budget for the state of Michigan from the governor for the 24-25 fiscal year and see how it affects things that are intended to eradicate poverty or at least alleviate poverty in our state and lift people to opportunity. Governor Gretchen Whitmer is on a very steady march, is how I would describe it, toward a different approach to those things. And this budget is a very clear expression of her intentions and where she wants to land us. And so when she made the proposal, first thing came to my mind was, hey, we've got to have a conversation about how this is supposed to work and what's going to happen.
You know, I want to step back for a second and say my initial thoughts about talking about a budget is I don't think about a budget often.
It's not your thing.
I don't think about a budget. I don't talk about it. I usually wait until we hear what the where the money's going, what programs they're going to, and then we analyze the programs. To your credit, I think it's always important for us as citizens who engage in our politics, who want to know what's going on in our society, to kind of preemptively better understand where things are headed.
Yeah.
So in that regard, I agree. So I'm curious to hear about that. I'm wondering like why
but you're
it
worried
is,
it's going to be a super nerdy conversation.
Well, it's not even that it's nerdy. It's like, to me, I don't know how much a budget means long term. Like, okay, sure, they have allocated these dollars, but will it actually result in what we think it's going to result in?
So, yeah. No, but it's a great question.
You know, you make a pretty good point about how the budget is insight into the governor's where the governor's placing value for our state.
Not every governor does it that way.
Okay.
But this is a governor who I think has very steadily moved and shifted things inside of state government through budgeting that result in a very different approach to these things. And so I think it's worth talking about because she's so clearly doing that. And we want to help people understand what's happening and then, of course, what that means. And we've got a great guest to do it. Monique Stanton is the CEO and the president of an organization called the Michigan League for Public Policy, which is a collection of experts on these very subjects. She is the perfect voice to help us understand all of this. Monique Stanton, welcome to Created Equal.
Good morning.
Yeah,
it's great to have you here. Thanks for having me,
Stephen. Yeah. So I wanted to talk to you in particular about this subject, about the governor's proposed budget, because I always go back to this description of budgeting that I once heard, which is that budgets are moral documents. Mm-hmm. It's not just about dollars and cents. It's not just about balancing things. It really is about a statement about priorities and the things that we value. And I know that the Michigan League for Public Policy, that's how you guys think about budgeting. It also occurs to me that if we think about the way Governor Gretchen Whitmer has approached budgeting since she was elected, she's been moving closer and closer to this idea of a budget that is framed almost entirely from the perspective of the priorities that we want to assign to government's effect on people's lives, I guess is the way I would describe that. And I think this is something that you know, most people who live in the state probably don't see when the rest of us who work in the press or in policy work are obsessing over every line in the budget. But it's important, and it's important for them to understand what's going on here and why it matters. And I think that you are kind of the perfect vessel for that conversation. So I want to start with you telling me about what the governor is proposing in her budget and why it's important that she's making the shifts that she is, and the things that kind of jump out to you that tell you that she's moving in that direction.
Great. Thanks, Stephen. We really at the League believe that the budget is our is a moral document, like you said, and what we choose to spend money on or don't frankly spend money on is a testament to what we believe is important and who we value in our community. And the governor's budget is an $80 billion budget. That's a lot of money and resources.
Yes.
But really taking a look at it through an economic and racial justice lens, there are huge investments that we're building on, from the federal investments that started during COVID to making sure that we have some ongoing, continuing funding to support really important things. Things like continuation of free school breakfasts and lunches. Mm-hmm. That's important for kids, mm-hmm. especially as we've seen increases in the demand for hunger. Investments in the Opportunity Index and continuing the commitment that started last year to making sure that we have an equitable school funding formula and recognizing that kids with special needs or having high concentrations of poverty are getting some impact. Changes to our family independence program or temporary assistance to needy families, raising the benefit level, that's another important thing that we're looking at doing in our state budget to address equity gaps.
Yeah, and let's talk for a minute about how we got here.
Right.
Governor Gretchen Whitmer was elected for the first time in 2018. Mm-hmm. So this is her, I'm going to count, this is the fifth or sixth budget.
Right.
It didn't start here.
Nope.
She has been moving that way. And in some cases, she's had to do it with a legislature that stood in opposition to
Absolutely.
Much of what she wanted to do. Talk about how she has brought us to this budget and this point.
So Governor Whitmer has had a significant commitment to racial equity and looking at things through a racial equity lens. And I think if you take a look at this budget, it really highlights that. But one of the things that happened during COVID was, I think, a light was shined on our social safety
mm-hmm.
and how we can use money, because poverty really is an absence of dollars and resources to prevent really significant crisis in families.
Yeah.
And we showed that work. Like if you look at the federal child tax credit, we cut poverty in half. So we know poverty is a choice. It's a policy choice. And we don't have to make those types of choices. And so I think the governor and her team really leaned in to lessons learned during the pandemic. And we really saw that there are things that we can do differently. And those commitments were made. And with the legislative makeup change, I think that she was able to help get some of her priorities across the finish line last year. And what we see this year really is a continuation and an enhancement of a lot of significant investments that started last year to make
yeah.
sure that we can have those things going forward.
Yeah. Some of the things that she's doing, of course, are boosted by the abundance of federal dollars that have come into Michigan, you know, because of COVID and then mm-hmm. because of some of the legislation that was passed by the Biden administration to help states out getting out of COVID and going forward. But a lot of it is also about how we spend the dollars that we collect here in Michigan from Michiganders and redistribute them. And we've done that, of course, forever. Other governors have not taken this approach. And it's not just about, I guess the differences are not just about how the money is spent or where it's spent. I guess some of it is about the approach overall and the coordination, I guess, of dollars in that in some cases were in disparate places in federal or in state government and are now kind of being consolidated. It's not just about budgeting. It's also about the structure of our government here
right.
in Michigan that's changing.
Absolutely. So talk about structure issues. For local communities, governments, people, school districts, it's really hard when there are radical up and down changes. So you get an influx of money and then that money goes away. So if you're talking about hiring staff, creating programs that people can know that are reliable year after year, that's a big change, I think, with this governor's budget. So we started some really positive things during COVID, and she's been committed to continuing those forward, recognizing that these were successful programs,
mm-hmm.
and we need to keep making these types of investments. So that's a structural change. So things like We started free lunches. We're making a commitment that this is now a priority. The cost for that has gone up, but we want to see that that service continues. The school funding, we've changed, you know, there's been changes with MDE and the Michigan My Leap department. So there's structural changes there. But looking at that opportunity index funding, we started it last year and we're continuing it. We don't sort of see this expectation that you started one great investment in 1 year and you're expecting to see huge turnaround results in 1 year, recognizing that these things take time to really start to show some of the positive outcomes.
It also occurs to me that some of what she's doing, and this is to the point that you were just making, is not just about who's the governor at the time, right? I mean,
right.
And in Michigan, we've been pretty bad, I think, about the seesaw effect
right.
of state government. You know, a Democrat is in office for a while and does some things, and then a Republican gets elected and they spend their time undoing
right.
a lot of what was done, and then they go in a different direction. And we did see that with, you know, Engler to Granholm to Snyder.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a very clear path. What she's doing, it seems, is not just saying, well, we're going to undo some of the things we didn't like from the administration before, but we're going to change the way that this all works so that, again, that there is predictability and stability.
Mm-hmm. Predictability is essential. So here's a good example of where that's working well is with Medicaid.
Uh-huh.
So under Snyder's administration, he, with the leadership, expanded Medicaid in Michigan as a result of the Affordable Care Act. That was a huge benefit to Michigan families.
Yes.
And what we've seen now in the governor's administration is how can we take that insignificant, important expansion and continue to make it better? So we're doing things like there's proposal to get rid of the Medicaid birth expense for, so if you have a baby, they will charge fathers if they're not wed to the mom
mm-hmm.
for those Medicaid expenses. So we're getting rid of that. That's an equity issue. We're getting rid of the $10 fee that families are charged for the My Child program. And so how can we make existing services better? And those things aren't necessarily always huge pots of money, but they make a big difference in people's lives. And
yeah.
so that continuation is really, really important. So we, again, getting away from that seesaw effect is essential.
Yeah. And then also when we're talking about this boon of federal dollars that has come in, I think a lot of people worry that, well, it is going to go away at some point. The
right.
federal government won't continue to subsidize a lot of the things that it has forever. I think a lot of people also worry about how we're prioritizing that money so that when it does run out, we are not caught short, right?
Right.
That we're not creating things that we can't sustain. Or spending in a way that that doesn't give us long-term results. And she's really been, I think, thoughtful about mm-hmm. the way we've approached that. There's some criticisms that people have made, but and some of them I think are legitimate. But overall, I think the approach has been to make changes that won't be dependent on that money.
Correct. And that's why I think you see in this year's budget specifically, you see some big, you know, big things that she's trying to do, but a lot of it is continuation because we did use those federal dollars for big one-time projects.
Yeah.
And that's going away. So we didn't create ongoing programs that were going to be dependent and sort of figure it out later, kick the can down the road. We didn't do that with this budget, which I think is really important.
Yeah, yeah. When we you were talking just earlier about some of these things, some of these specific changes and how they are equity issues. Mm-hmm. I want to stop for a second and have you talk about why they are equity issues and why that approach matters. I feel like we're in a time when there's a lot of people who say that's not how we should be thinking about things, that that the progress that's been made, the social progress that's been made in this country puts us at a place where we shouldn't focus on that kind of opportunity. I want to have you make the case for why that makes sense.
Sure. So equity from our standpoint is not sameness. People
yes.
need different things in order to be successful.
That's right.
And if you look at outcomes, whether it's, you know, yesterday was Women's Pay Equality Day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a long time in the year in terms of how long it takes for men and women to be paid equal. And for Black and brown women and women of color, that's even a longer time period.
Sure.
And so there's outcomes there. There's maternal infant health outcomes, there's infant mortality outcomes, and things that we know that race plays an important factor in what those outcomes look like, as well as sort of economic opportunity. But race and economic and poverty are not necessarily interchangeable. And so we want to make sure that we're looking at what people need and addressing that in order to help level the playing field and help make sure that people have an opportunity to succeed. I think that Opportunity School Index is a perfect example. We talk about concentrations of poverty. There's a great map on the website that our website that shows, you know, what school districts or what counties have different percentages for that opportunity index. And it's telling, you know, I think, you know, over half of our school kids are going to benefit from that because we have issues with poverty in our state. And that's both in our cities and in deep rural community as well.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a fight in Lansing right now over this idea of recognizing race and spending money or setting priorities according to race. Many of the Republican representatives in Lansing say that is racism. It's not different from treating somebody differently because of the color of their skin. Answer that. Tell us why that's not the right way to think of it, that if we were just colorblind about all of these things, right, everything would be okay.
Well, things aren't okay. And we have a history, whether we're talking about redlining, we're talking about who benefited from the GI Bill, who benefited from access to capital. Those are generational things. And when we talk about generational wealth, it takes a significant amount of time to overcome that. And we have not done a good job of addressing income inequality and racial inequality in our country. And so if we want to do better, we need to make sure that we acknowledge race. A good example, an individual example of this is, you know, people say, well, poverty is, we're really talking about poverty. We don't need to talk about race. Well, look at Serena Williams. She has a intensely powerful story and almost died during childbirth because of her health care or health conditions, and likely was not recognized because she is a Black woman. And she has all the means and power in the world in terms of money, access, power. And so when we look at both individual examples as well as really looking at the data, it shows that there are different outcomes when you are a person of color or coming from a Black and brown community.
Yeah, race matters, and we can't pretend that it doesn't as a way of achieving progress. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to dig deeper into the proposed budget by Governor Gretchen Whitmer with Monique Stanton of the Michigan League for Public Policy. Take a look at some of the profound changes that the governor thinks will make better progress, especially for people who are locked out of progress so often here in the state. Stay where you are. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you're with us. Our guest today is Monique Stanton. She is the executive director of the Michigan League for Public Policy, which is an advocacy group here in the state that takes a look at how state government in particular affects people's lives through policy, through budgeting, through all of the things that they do in Lansing. We're talking about Governor Gretchen Whitmer's proposed budget for the next year here in the state and some really profound changes that the governor would like to make in the way that we spend money and try to affect people's lives, try to lift people to opportunity. Monique, I want to talk specifically about some of the things that she's doing and some of the big, the big ticket items. Let's start with TANF, which, you know, I say that and I think sometimes people's eyes glaze over because they don't know what that is, or even if they know what it stands for, they don't know how it works. That is a federal program that stands for, TANF is temporary assistance for needy families. It is a kind of signature anti-poverty program for federal spending. It gets moved to states that are supposed to figure out how best to spend that money. It has a terrible, almost mockingly bad track record, not just in Michigan, but in many, many states. I think for frame of reference for listeners, if you've read about this scandal in Mississippi involving former professional quarterback Brett Favre and supposedly his involvement in taking state money and misusing it, those were TANF funds that were at stake there. And I don't think anyone was surprised when that happened that it was TANF. Governor Whitmer is proposing to do something really different with TANF here. Talk about how she wants to change it and how important that change would be.
So one of the things about TANF is that it is very flexible. The federal government allows for a significant amount of federal or flexibility in how states choose to spend their program.
And some people would say that's the problem, right? That they have too much choice and they end up blowing
it. And for Michigan, in the history of Michigan, we've raided our TANF funding to plug different budget holes. And so things that we have historically paid for TANF are important things, but aren't necessarily the anti-poverty measure that we should be using for TANF. So the TANF really is supposed to pay for direct cash assistance for people that are living in poverty and are giving people help at times that are most critical in their lives. And so one of the things that when we go out and talk to people, people are typically pretty surprised. We don't spend most of our TANF dollars on cash assistance.
Yeah.
It's just over 7% of our total allocation that we use on these cash payments and on the Family Independence Program in Michigan. We pay for things like college scholarships, childcare, foster care supports, things that are, again, important, but not necessarily what we should be spending on. And so one of the big structural changes that the governor has proposed is no longer using our TANF dollars on college scholarships. We've increased funding in other areas, so those college scholarships aren't necessarily not going to be supported, but we'll be able to increase the cash assistance payment, which is essential. Right now, the max payment that you can get is $492 a month. You can't make more than $812, including that $492.
Oh,
and so we'll talk about the fair market rent for a two-bedroom house in Wayne County. It's just under $1,300.
Right. So you're not even having enough.
You don't
to
have
live.
Enough. You just frankly do absolutely not have enough. And so we're talking about making a meaningful increase to that payment, increasing some of the child supplements that you get from $50 per child to $150. So again, recognizing that young children have higher need. And so we're looking at issues of equity there. The other big change is increasing the lifetime ban for how long you can participate. And so going from 48 months up to the 60 months, which is the federal standard. Mm-hmm. So making sure that when people need TANF, it's available to them. So you might have a crisis early on in your life and then not be able to get help, you know, 10 years, 15 years later because of some of these lifetime benefits. And so we want to really make sure that this is accessible for people.
Yeah. When you talk about things like TANF, you know, it reminds me of, I guess, the nature of financial insecurity and the nature of kind of transient opportunity that exists in people's lives. Mm-hmm. And so often, I think we see government try to set policy that is kind of one size fits all for poor people, and says, well, look, you had a chance here. that's enough. You don't get another one because we don't want to, quote unquote, waste money. But that doesn't really reflect the way people are living now.
No.
And when you think about the things that happen in people's lives that push them to financial insecurity or crisis, and that need for temporary assistance, which is what TANF stands for, you've got to have an approach that is flexible that way.
Right. So I'm gonna, RX Kids in Flint, I think, is a perfect example.
Yes. And we talked with Mona Hannah Atisha and Luke Schaefer here on Created Equal about RX Kids. It's a great example of the shift
that,
here.
That's how we should be thinking about cash assistance. What are things that we can do that give people the resources that they need to get by? And there's lots of data that's coming out that different types of cash assistance, cash payment programs work. They improve emotional and mental health. I'm hopeful that this is going to show a health improvement in birth outcomes and overall health outcomes, and hopefully a reduction in child abuse and neglect cases. And these types of programs are also showing an economic support to your local economy, because people spend the money. It's not like they're, you know, holding on to that or investing that money. They're spending it on things to help make ends meet, to support their families at times that are most critical.
Yeah. Another big part of the budget and the budget argument that we're about to have, I think, is about revenue.
Mm-hmm.
How we get it,
right,
how much we get, and whether we can create, again, stable sources for the revenue that we need to spend for the programming that we need. And there is an argument about the income tax here in Michigan that's going on. Talk about how important that is to what the governor's trying to do.
So you need stable revenue. Everybody needs stable revenue so you can count what's coming in and what's going out. We would love, this is not in the governor's budget, we would love to see something like a graduated income tax in Michigan.
I think
because
a lot
that's
of people
an equitable
would love
that, right? Way to tax and look at things.
And I will make this point quickly. Every other state I've lived in, other than Michigan, has had a graduated income tax. And if you think of those states, the one I always bring up is Maryland, which is, Maryland has lots of problems, just like Michigan. But one of the things it doesn't face is this weirdness with revenue. It's much more stable.
Right. And you need stable revenue. The Growing Michigan Together Council report, we talked a lot about high needs in that report to address systemic issues in Michigan. We're not going to be able to address some of those needs unless we talk about revenue, and we need to have a balanced approach to revenue. Michigan, I think there's a perception that we're a high tax state. We're really in the middle. So it's not like we have super high taxes in comparison to other states. And so that's something that we really need to look at. And we need to be able to make sure that it's an equitable tax structure. So we aren't enacting just regressive taxes that touch people that are low or very low incomes.
Yeah. So talk a little more about the equity issue there as well, why that gets to this idea of fairness.
Right. So if we have, you have sales tax, for instance, everybody pays sales tax on things that they need. But for somebody that's of a lower income, that's going to take a bigger bite out of their total paycheck than somebody that's at a higher income level. So really thinking about ways that we can make sure that that tax structure is equitable. So with a graduated income tax, people at the top are paying a higher percentage of their total taxable dollars. And that is just frankly a more equitable approach. People that are making significant more money should be paying more because they're also benefiting from all the different things that are happening in our state, whether it's roads or parks or schools or, you know, improvements in healthcare. That overall has a positive impact in the state.
Yeah. There were other things in the budget that MLPP was really pleased with. Talk about what some of them are in terms of, again, the changes in this approach.
Right. So childcare, that's something, and universal pre-K, those are two big things that have been important for the league. And so we are excited about universal pre-K. I think it offers an opportunity for children across Michigan to get access to high quality preschool programs. I will say that we are a little bit concerned that we want to make sure that we're looking at the whole child care system. Mm-hmm. Child care is a very complicated system, and it's an essential part of our overall workforce participation and labor participation in Michigan. And so we want to make sure that infants and toddlers specifically, because that's a higher cost of care, aren't hurt, those providers, as we implement this child care universal pre-care system. And so we do talk about a 10% increase in the child care subsidy, which is positive, but not quite enough to get us to what those rates were during pandemic levels, or not truly getting us to a true cost of child care.
Yeah. And again, for people who live in poverty or on the edge of poverty, right, child care is everything.
Right.
And it can suck up a lot of course, your resources, but you don't have a choice about it.
Right.
You have to find a way
right
to care for your children.
And so one of the things that I was pretty excited about is actually the governor's proposal to provide free child care for child care workers through the child care subsidy. So if you are a child care worker, you're making roughly $27,000, just under $27,000 a year. So your cost of childcare could equal roughly 45% of your total household budget.
Wow.
And so that is a huge tension, that we're paying our childcare workers low wages to do really essential work at the time that your child's brain is developing the fastest and the most. And so we want to make sure that we're supporting these workers so kids are ultimately getting the best care that they need.
Yeah. I know you have thoughts about MIPSRs as well. And there we go again with the state government jargon. I have forgotten long ago, I think, what MIPSRs actually stands for. But it's essentially the Public School Employees Retirement System.
Right.
It is something that requires a lot of support.
Right.
We've got to pay into that and pay in now, not for the people who are teaching today, but for the people who are going to be retiring in years from now, right? It's an investment.
Right.
There are some things about that in this budget that caught your eye. Tell me what they were.
Right. So part of what's happening with MIPSRs is a change in the payment structure. And so we would not necessarily be making the same contribution to the MIPSRs fund that we've made in years past, and in part because we've been successfully building on that over years. Mm-hmm. And so we would be able to use some of those dollars to pay for things like universal pre-K and some of the other enhancements in our school aid budget. And so we haven't taken a formal position on what we should do with MIPSRs. If that part of the budget does not go through, we're talking about a potential revenue hole for some of those other investments that we would like to make.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a trade-off that's
right
kind of tricky. I mean,
it's a tricky trade-off.
Yeah.
And part of the challenge was, when this was designed under Governor Snyder, the idea was in the future it would be funded at a level where we wouldn't have to be making these large contributions.
Yeah.
And so this might be the right time to start benefiting from that structural change in how we budget and plan things.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take another quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue talking with Monique Stanton, president and CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy, about Governor Gretchen Whitmer's proposed budget, how it leans into the idea of equity. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. Welcome back to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We're talking with Monique Stanton today. She is the president and CEO of the Michigan League for Public Policy, an advocacy group in Lansing that keeps close watch over legislation and budgeting in our state government, takes a look at how it affects people's lives. We're talking about Governor Gretchen Whitmer's proposed budget in Lansing and some significant changes that she's making to the way the state spends money to try to lift people out of poverty and to opportunity. Monique, I want to talk now about you know, hoped for, I guess, outcomes from this kind of change, if it's successful, the kind of things that we might see in the future. I want to start, though, with putting this in the context of something else the governor is trying to do. She is really focused on reversing, well, not really reversing the trend, because we're not losing population here in the state of Michigan, but we aren't growing at the same rate that a lot of other states are. And there's a concern that, that you know, we need to do that. We need to do better at that. And so she's created this council, the Grow Michigan Together Council, that has been working real hard on looking at what happens to drive people away from Michigan and how we attract more. It seems to me that this budgeting approach, this budgeting exercise, is at least in part focused on trying to make this a better place for people to mm-hmm. be, but also to come to.
Absolutely. So from our premise with the council and the recommendations, I think the most important place for us to start are issues of equity. And so if we're not addressing issues of concentrated poverty, mm-hmm. Structural challenges within our school and education system, those are fundamental reasons of why people are not coming to Michigan. That might not show up in your survey data as structural poverty, that's why I'm not coming to Michigan. But those are our core challenges in terms of transit, what our communities look like, what our cities look like. And so addressing these equity issues, I think, is foundational to growing our communities and our state overall.
Yeah. Talk about what those issues are, the kind of high line equity issues that you think fit into that, right. that
so
growth model.
Transit, whether you're talking about City of Detroit struggling in Southeast Michigan, we could, I know that could be a whole separate show, issues of related
talk
to transit.
For hours about that.
About transit.
4 years of not getting our act together.
Right. But also rural Michigan has the same transit issues. Those solutions look different, but people need to be able to get where they need to go for jobs and healthcare and education. That's a priority. Education, schools and education is so fundamental, one, for growing our overall graduation rates and post-college career attainment goals, but also that's a reason why people will come or not come to Michigan. And so we want to make sure that our education outcomes are strong. And then, is Michigan a welcoming place? And so looking at these investments for access to reproductive freedom, support and freedoms for our LGBTQ plus communities, is it welcoming to immigrants? And so making sure that we're doing things that structurally make Michigan a better, more secure, welcoming place for people is essential.
You know, the immigration question, I think, is really interesting right now, given the national conversation right. and debate about immigration policy. You have these states along the southern border that are really concerned about the influx of immigrants, whether they are legal or not, frankly, and how they will be able to afford to care for them and also care for the people who are already in the state with that extra burden. It seems that we have the opposite problem here, and we're not really good at telling that story. We're not really good at projecting that.
Right.
That we, if we took a fraction, really, of the immigrants that Texas is trying to bus to New York or Boston or Chicago mm-hmm. here, they would, first of all, they could help with the population problem overall, obviously.
Right.
But the talent gap that we have is something that could be alleviated by immigrants. You know, people, I think, too often think about immigrants as poor people without skills. Many of them are poor people, but they have skills. They're coming
right.
to this country because they think their skills could be put to use. You think of the gaps that we have in employment that could be filled. And then long term, of course, the contributions that they could make in terms of business mm-hmm. creation, in terms of education. I mean, there are so many opportunities. Is the governor, I guess, leaning into that in the right way?
I think so. I think the governor recognizes, the council recognized that really Michigan, where we're growing population, is with immigrant communities. And our struggle is actually people will move here for a period of time and then leave the state.
So
we're not doing a great retention job. Mm-hmm. And so we want to make sure that we're attracting new immigrants to our state as well as retaining people so they don't move somewhere else if they're maybe they've been here for 3 to 5 years. Mm-hmm. So language access, that was legislation that was passed last year, making sure that language is accessible for all layers of government, whether it's the Secretary of State or signing up for healthcare through MDHHS, or you're going to one of our beautiful parks, making sure that those things are accessible. And those are the types of things that can signal that we're truly a welcoming community. We've also been a longtime advocate for having driver's licenses restored for our undocumented community members. And so really would love to see something like that happen. I know it's a difficult climate right now because of some of the unfortunate national conversation. Yeah. And then we also want to make sure that we're protecting especially minors. There was a pretty awful article about a child that was injured in northern Michigan and is now a paraplegic. And this is a child that's here. We want to make sure that there are labor protections for children. And so getting back to that issue of race, migrant children deserve the same protections as all children and white children in our state. And they should not be expected to do things like construction and all these horrible things that have happened. They have high rates of injury.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to me that the debate about immigration is almost always framed from a national concept as a question about legality, right? Is someone here legally or are they not here legally? When you get down to the states, though, like Michigan, there are all of these other things that actually matter maybe more than someone's legal status about what they need, but even more what they can contribute, how they can help power the economy in our state.
And there's all kinds of data out there around how immigrants often have high rates of entrepreneurship, contribute to the economy, pay taxes to for the economy, and really support our overall economy. And so we really should be a welcoming place. We were historically, and we need to make sure that we're getting there again.
Yeah. I also want to talk about Detroit and cities in Michigan and sort of the urgent need, I think, to continue to invest in cities from the state government's point of view. But I also want to talk a little more about rural communities. Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier the connection between cities and rural communities when it comes to transit. There are lots of other things that I feel like we don't really recognize that connect the needs of people in Detroit and the people in Manistee, for instance.
Right. So we've been actually doing a host of listening sessions with one of our community partners, Michigan United, right now across the state. And the issues and the solutions are very similar.
The same.
They are the same. So we were in, you know, northern Michigan, and we were talking to somebody that could not get to their job. The person had a criminal record on their, they had a felony record, so that was prohibitive for accessing employment. The person really was grateful to be there because we were doing a nice hot meal. So food insecurity, whether we are in deep rural community or the city of Detroit, it is very similar challenges. And we have concentrated poverty all across our state. Mm-hmm. This is not just a city of Detroit problem, which, you know, from our point of view is really code for language. We're talking about black versus white.
Sure.
And we have these issues across our state. And so we really want to make sure that we are recognizing the similarities and concern, and we're addressing these in a systemic way. One of the things that I'm excited about for going back to how the governor is doing things is that she's created an Office of Rural Engagement. And so I think making sure that we're looking at rural engagement outside of just sort of through agriculture is really important.
Yeah. And it's not even just rural engagement. It is rural engagement with the rest of the state, right? So often when I talk with folks in Lansing, you know, they're all together in one building, in the legislature, trying to come up with the framework to help everybody. I think they see each other and the fullness of the similarities between each other much more clearly than sometimes people back home can see. How often do people from Detroit, for instance, get a chance to see rural communities? Right. How often are rural Michiganders in cities? We really do need to make that point that we are first of all Michiganders, but that many of our problems are the same, and that helping one part of the state doesn't have to come at the expense of the other. That's the framework that gets us into trouble.
Right. Absolutely. That is 100% our history, is the framework, the pitting people against each other rather than looking at what is a solution that can be effective for both rural community as well as cities. And frankly, like something like transit, you can have, you know, one day I'm hopeful we're going to get a solid transit system in Southeast Michigan. That's going to look different in the UP, but that issue is still a problem for, you know, you're not going to build light rail in the UP, for instance, but we can do things to address transit. We can do things to address access to health care or child care, because those are our concerns that are coming across wherever we go for our listening sessions.
Yeah. So before we have to end, give listeners, again, I think people don't always pay terribly rapt attention to the budget process, but it is a process. Mm-hmm. Give listeners an idea of how all this goes forward from here and when all this gets done.
So we are in the process of committee hearings right now. So this is an important time that if you have a issue that you think really you want to make sure happens, this is your opportunity to get in front of your legislators, go to coffee hours, talk to people, listen to hearings if you're really sort of wonky like us at the League. And then the goal is to really get the budget. We expect the budget to be signed sometime in June. And this is for the 2025 budget cycle.
Yes.
So this would start in October of this coming year.
Yeah,
so
our fiscal years are October 1 to September 30.
Little strange, but that's our fiscal year. And then the 2026 budget process will start pretty much as soon as the ink is assigned and dried on those budget documents. We really start thinking about the 2026 year.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Monique Stanton, I said up front that you were the right person to have this conversation.
It's always a great conversation.
You absolutely are. I don't know many people who pay more kind of close attention to this stuff than you do. So thank you for that. But also thank you for being here on Created Equal.
Anytime. Thanks, Stephen.
Yeah. All right, Stephen. I think now I'm feeling a little bit better. I've learned a little bit more about the importance and relevance of a governor's budget.
I hope so. That's always our goal.
Yeah. It helped for Monique to kind of break down the different elements of the budget, how it's supposed to set us up long term. I mean, when Monique brought up how the governor is trying to be more consistent with funding that they found important now and trying to sustain those programs into the future, that's when I was like, okay, we're cooking. Usually, to me at least, budgets are money that you allocate towards programs. The program runs for however long, and that's the end all be all of what I understand. Should it be running more longer? Yes. And at least in my mind, I think that they're going to be running forever once they fund it. But it's important to identify that if they don't fund it with money, it's not going to still be there. So for the governor to be intentional about taking programs that have worked previously, funding them now and funding them for the future, and hoping that that stays a constant for Michigan residents, is something I hadn't previously considered. So I'm glad we did have her on to talk about this.
Yeah. No, I think again, it's the context here that matters, right? A budget is literally just how you want to spend money over 12 months. Mm-hmm. But then when you think about it in the context of a governor's term in office, which is 4 years, of course, often what you see is a progression of ideas and approaches that changes over time. And Governor Gretchen Whitmer, I think, is somebody who is doing that quite deliberately. And it's not getting a lot of attention because it is obscure, and there's only, I don't know, 6 or 7 people in the whole state who actually pay attention to budgeting. But when you do try to dig through it, I think you see some things, and Monique was great at pointing out some things that really could produce different results for the most vulnerable people in our state, and especially for children.
Could is pulling a lot of weight in that sentence, I must say.
It is. It is. It's always, I mean, there is always a conditional aspect of government spending and programming, which is that, you know, it doesn't always do what they think it's going to do. And then it also sometimes does things that they didn't predict. Right. But here, I think a certain degree of optimism is called for and warranted. And I think you could hear that in what Monique was talking about.
Yeah, and I think our listeners will appreciate a closer look at something like this.
That's a success. That's it for this episode of Created Equal. You can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org and make sure to subscribe to our podcast. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. Our audio editing is by Connor Anderson, and the music is by Sam Bobian. Our digital production team is Jenny Sherman, Dave Kim, and Sophia Joswiak. Our program director is Adam Fox. Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.